question number 9341, real one.
Mr. Cod, real one. Can you tell me first of all, Mr. Cod, how you came to join the fire service?
Yes, I do remember. I was living in the temple at the time, and I saw a notice in the Times newspaper that recruiting was starting for the London Fire Brigade, and that there was a river section, the London River Service. And I thought this was a good idea to enroll at this early stage, which was more than 12 months before war did in fact break out. And I went down to Blackfriars, just round the corner from the temple, and put my name down as an auxiliary for enrolment, should war break out. And from then on, once a week in the evening, we used to go down for instruction in the fire service drills and routines, and the geography of the river, and general instruction in fire service ways.
What was the name of the ship that you served aboard?
The Blackfriars River Fire Service had the fireboat Massey Shaw, which was the only firefighting boat based at Blackfriars.
How do you spell Massey?
M-A-S-S-E-Y and S-H-A-W.
Do you know why it was called the Massey Shaw?
Yes. Some time around the turn of the century, there was the chief of the fire service was a gentleman called Massey Shaw, who has been immortalised in one of the Gilbert and Sullivan operas with a song mentioning Massey Shaw, who was quite a character, one understands, in his day.
Can you describe the ship?
It was, the Massey Shaw was built to strict specifications for work on the river. It had a very shallow draft. It had its monitor pumping equipment, and it was fixed with auxiliary attachments for hose to be run ashore.
What was the monitor pumping equipment?
That worked from the engines of the boat with capable of throwing a tremendous jet and very far, you know, reach to the highest buildings it was likely to be engaged upon.
Could the ship go very fast?
It wasn't a particularly fast boat. It was built more for its equipment and its shallow draft than for anything else. But it had powerful engines aboard, and it could do a decent turn of speed.
What kind of size of crew was there?
It didn't require many. Two on the engines, as far as I remember. And the skipper in charge of the boat. And I think about half a dozen crew for work on the pumps.
And what was your own job aboard?
Never more than just one of the crew.
Did you have a rank in the fire service?
No, I was ordinary fireman when I joined, and at the time of the call to Dunkirk.
Presumably the Massey Shaw never had any armaments on in the war.
No, that was... I could tell you about that on the last trip we made, which was rather a special visit. We put a machine gun on board. That was the last of the three visits that the Massey Shaw made to Dunkirk, in which I was one of the crew again.
What kind of machine gun was it, do you know?
I don't know. I remember one of the auxiliaries, a great friend of mine, had been in the Spanish war, fighting against the Franco forces, and was delighted when he saw this machine gun being erected on the deck of the Massey Shaw, because he said he'd worked one of them in his escapades in Spain.
How was the ship fueled?
Diesel.
Now, can you recollect when the war broke out, how you reacted when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Yes. Yes, I do remember. I'm sure it was the Friday afternoon of the 1st of December, 1st of September. Everyone was listening to the radio. I was in the office. Everyone felt somehow that war must come. And later there were announcements about people being mobilized. And as far as I remember, people were asked to, if they had enrolled for any work connected with the war, that they should report their presence to whatever organization they were enrolled for. And that evening I went along as an auxiliary fireman to my station at Blackfriars, where many others had turned up, also all the auxiliaries. And that evening we were sent down to Southwark to fill sandbags. And I spent the whole evening from 6 o'clock in the evening till about 11 o'clock at night with a spade and shovel filling sandbags, together with 50 or 100 other auxiliary firemen.
Were people depressed at the thought of having to go to war?
I was very sad, but I had foreseen that with Hitler's advance across Europe and his latest move, that war was both inevitable and necessary. And I think that evening on Friday, I was too numbed with tiredness and and sadness, really, to feel much except misery that all my past life would be changed from now on. Funnily enough, it wasn't until the Saturday morning that I got up in my own flat and that I felt an intolerable weight of sadness.
We haven't said what job you were doing when you applied to become an auxiliary fireman.
Yes, I was... I'd worked all my working life in the family printing business in the city, within 2 minutes' walk of the Bank of England. And that was the life I knew, apart from my many friends that I used to meet and enjoy life with, as a free bachelor in London, earning enough to enjoy life as one could in those days. At that time I was 30 years old and I'd had a very pleasant bachelor life, and now I felt it was coming to an end.
So you'd been doing managerial work, had you?
Yes, I was a director of the family business.
Now, can we go on to the German attack on France and the Low Countries in May 1940? And can you tell me at what stage you began to realise that something was going wrong for the British and French forces?
Yes, well, Munich had come and gone. And the war had come, and then the Maginot Line was cracking, and all through that May, in beautiful weather, one felt the news was always bad. Nothing seemed to go our way, and the Germans seemed to be marching with the inevitable relentless speed across France and narrowing our forces down as we had to retreat or were being captured as prisoners of war. Yes, I felt that it was not going our way, but what could we do? We were helpless, as based in England. Nothing we could do to help.
Presumably up till then, you'd had very little to do in the way of protecting London from fires.
No, it had nothing. No civilian fires. It was what we call the phony war. And no bombs had come. Until now, I'm not sure of my dates, but yes, that's right. Yes, there was no incidents connected with the war in London at all at that time. There were no civilian fires that we got involved in, and we'd had no practical experience of fighting a real fire. And then this call came.
This was when you were asked to go to Dunkirk?
Yes, when we were asked to go to Dunkirk.
Can you tell me how it came about, as you remember it?
Yes. We'd had lunch on a fine sunny day, and suddenly the bell went to assemble us all. So we trooped out, all of the auxiliaries on duty at that time at Blackfriars. I suppose we were about 70 or 80 of us, assembled in the usual place, which is on the staircase and landing at Blackfriars. And the station officer looking very solemn and backed by his lieutenants, said a message from Lambeth headquarters. The Massishaw is going to Dunkirk. Oh, everyone gasped. With no idea what would be the duties of the Massishaw. We imagined, of course, that it would be fighting fires. And someone suggested the whole sea would be a sheet of flame and we'd have to guide the Massishaw through acres of flaming sea, carving away with our monitor to get to ships or people or whatever we might be required to do. So, with that awful vision, the station officer said, "Now, I want a crew." He said, "which will be under the skipper of the Massishaw, with the engine crew of regulars, and I want about half a dozen auxiliary volunteers." There was a tiny second of hesitation, and then as one man we all stepped forward and held our hand up, and that threw the station officer into complete confusion. He didn't know what to do because he'd got to choose six out of about 70 people. So there was a lot of debate, and they decided that they would choose the senior enrolled people as our main priority. So as my name was in fact the earliest of the whole station, I had a right under this direction to be one of the crew, which I eagerly held as my right to be one of the volunteers. And I can remember the other half dozen or so who were chosen, mostly for seniority of joining. So we were then told, "Well, get ready and down on the Massishaw to get the boat ready for the journey round to Ramsgate and then over to the to Dunkirk."
What preparations did you have to make?
The first thing that was realised was if we were crossing the sea as opposed to the calm river, we would have to board up the portholes. So plywood and nails and hammers were obtained, and the portholes were firmly firmly protected against the sea, which would have come through with shattered glass. Because they weren't all really sea portholes, there were sliding windows and other things that were fragile. Anyway, that was duly carried out, and within not much over an hour, we were on our way downriver.
Any other preparations that you had to make?
Not really, that I can remember. I remember none of us knew what on earth we were going for. None of us realised it was evacuation of troops and rescue of individuals, and not anything to do with firefighting. But I think at headquarters they must have known this, but they certainly, the message didn't reach the crew.
Did you take any special personal equipment?
No.
How were you dressed?
I was dressed, yes, in the standard uniform, which was a navy square rig type jacket. Not a high buttoned collar. It was more like a blazer of a dark navy blue. And almost black. I think they were navy blue from what I remember. But almost black trousers. And that was, and a white shirt. And that's as I went.
And helmets?
No helmets, no. Just the ordinary peaked cap, like any railway porter or traffic warden would wear nowadays.
What equipment did you have in the fire service then?
Oh, well, we had our axe and there was a good strong belt at which you tied a small length of personal thick, heavy, strong line, only about 10 feet long. Never did quite understand what that was for, but I think tying yourself onto ladders or drain pipes or something. But it was standard equipment. And the little fireman's axe. And that was really all you got issued with.
Had you ever been to sea before?
Not in any real sense, no. No, I'd not been what you'd call a boating enthusiast. I had been, of course, in sailing craft on smooth waters. I hadn't done any sea yachting ever.
Had you ever crossed the channel before?
Yes, well, only in a channel boat, in the normal way a passenger would go to France.
What about your colleagues aboard? Were any of those experienced seamen?
No, I don't think they were. No, as far as I remember, they were just civilian people like myself.
Do you recollect any of their names?
Yes, the as a result of that whole trip, two auxiliary firemen were awarded a medal. One of them, a good old mate of mine, was a pre-war docker. One of the salt of the earth. And the other end of the other person who got decorated for this episode was Shiner Wright. I think he was a solicitor. I think he's dead now, as indeed my old friend the docker, whose name was Harry Ray, is dead.
R-A-E?
W-R-A-Y. I think it was W-R-A-Y.
Now, can you type the voyage, if you can recollect it?
Yes, we left Ramsgate in the afternoon. The sea was like a mill pond, quite exceptional. The whole weather had been right through May, continuous sunshine and no storm, no wind. It was perfect weather. In fact, the sea was as warm as it would be in midsummer, because we got to know about that when we got to Dunkirk and had to stand in the sea and spend all night wet through and felt no cold. Yes, we started off, and there was the horizon, no coast visible until after an hour or so. The first thing we could see was a black column of smoke, and as we visible perhaps from 10 miles away, and as we got nearer and nearer, it seemed to be more menacing. It became an enormous black menace. We thought perhaps the whole of Dunkirk was alight and burning. Anyway, as we got closer, we could see that was an oil fire. Some oil installation had been ignited and was burning, as they do with black smoke, probably go on for a day or two. Then we could see the outline of the coast, flat, no distinguishing marks. And then, from about a mile away, still no aeroplanes, no bombs, no menace. Then we could see that it was a flat beach, a sandy beach. And then we saw the silhouette of houses against the sky, the setting sun. Not a continuous line of buildings, but breaks in the buildings, what could be a hotel, and then a house, and then another hotel, then several houses. We could see that silhouette, but we couldn't see